Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Penn State football is halfway through spring practice. Can you believe that? Practice number 7 last night out of 15, so we're roughly at the halfway point. We're going to be talking about what we heard and saw yesterday at the Penn State practice facilities. James Franklin spoke after practice, got a chance to have a conversation with Tom Allen, defensive coordinator, a couple of football players as well. So all that coming up on the show today, and we're going to be sifting through some of the various and maybe at sometimes a little bit conflicting comments we got last night, and also your questions and thoughts. The offensive line stars in the BWI mailbag coming up in just a little bit. So if you've got any questions, any thoughts, any comments, throw them in the live chat, and we'll get into that at the end of the show. We got some questions from previous shows as well. We're going to be threading into the mailbag as well. Appreciate everyone being here for spring football, because I know the blue-white game is what everyone focuses on. It's a good time to come up, have a good time in Happy Valley, but all of those things that are happening culminate on that day, and we're discussing the 6 weeks that lead up to it here on the BWI Live Show all spring long. So thank you for being with us. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the channel so you don't miss any press conferences, any videos, any highlights, Nate talking about Ponzi schemes. Like, it's all here. Everything you could possibly want here on the Blue White Illustrated YouTube channel, and of course at BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. I have vamped for long enough. Sean Fitz, Nate Bauer, the insiders for Penn State football, here to talk about what they saw and heard yesterday at practice. So Fitz, coming to you first, off the top, first thing that comes to your mind about what you saw or heard yesterday that you think is relevant and interesting.
The best ability is availability. And last week on the show, we mentioned Deni Dennis Sutton hadn't been through the first, I think, five at that point, sessions of spring practice, and also said there's nothing to worry about. The good news is there's nothing to worry about. He was back at practice last night, and that's always a good thing to see Deni out there. That defensive end group, we're going to continue talking about, even though they have some retooling to do and some progress to make. I think we just kind of assume that based on the way that Penn State's been at defensive end the last several seasons, that they're just going to replace Adisa Isaac, Chop Robinson, move on. And there's an element of that because they have the talent to do so, but that continues to come along. So I'm pleased to see Deni back out there. Obviously one of the faces of this team. And it's fun because you get a chance to, when he's not in there, to see Amin Vanover, who is a guy that's gotten some positive buzz this spring, Zariah Fisher and Jimmy Lyons, who's a guy that I can't wait to blow up. So, by the way, Abdul Carter, the guy that many people believe is Penn State's best defender, is there as well. So
yeah,
a lot of potential at that defensive end spot. You continue to see it. It's just these spots that we continue to kind of take for granted, defensive end and corner working themselves out in a good way, I think, this spring.
Nate, you had a dual role yesterday, so you got to see a little bit of everything. Give us some highlights of, before we get into the full breakdown of what you guys saw, offense, defense, what was interesting to you yesterday?
Yeah, so on the offensive side of the ball, I didn't see Nick Singleton and immediately blacked out. I fainted. I hit the ground. I came to my senses. I couldn't believe, like, what? How is this possible?
Why would they even have practice without him?
Right. I mean, just call the whole thing off. He was not there, which immediately sent me into orbit. And so I had to find out if he was okay, and he is. So it's all good. He's fine. And you know, that was really the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway, I would say, on the offensive side of the ball, is that Nick Singleton is in fact okay.
Yeah.
Outside of that, you know, pretty typical business as usual, right? The passing lines, right? The receivers, quarterbacks, another week missing. for Jackson Smolik. If you have not been on our message board, check it out.
Here's the best way to do that, by the way.
There it is.
If you want to check it out, we have an awesome podcast, YouTube, and radio following. So if you want to join us on the site and just complete your BWI indoctrination, code PSU1, 2 months for $1. You'll get some of these insider information, something going on with Jackson Smolik that Nate just hinted at. The answer.
Ryan Snyder, hat tip, right?
Our foul mouth friend Ryan Smyer, yes.
Potty mouth. Will not let my kids watch this show. Ryan had some insight on that, I believe, what, a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
So, if I have to say the thing that stood out to me yesterday the most, non-practice, but James Franklin related, mm-hmm. was him essentially saying, and this is horrible for the show, but I'm going to say it anyway, is him saying, yeah, this doesn't really mean anything. Like, this is spring football. Yeah. Right. Like, yeah. He's like everybody on the team. Right. So it's not just fans that are interested in this. It's everybody within the program is jockeying for position. Right. They see spring football as this opportunity to make a push, and effectively he's saying, and this has been the case for 10 years, but that's not what it is. That's not how he sees it. That's not how the program sees it. It is.
Yeah.
You are going to take very few strides in terms of the competitive portion of spring practice. It's about setting yourself up to compete even when nobody's watching in the summer. It's
a lot of emphasis on that yesterday from James Franklin. And I do want to get to that later when we talk about his press conference, big picture takeaways, because that was a big one to me. And what that is, the implication of that for the players on the roster. But the first thing that I need to tell you about is Nittany Cards Plus. Nittany Cards Plus is the only dedicated sports trading card and collectible shop in Happy Valley, 1631 South Atherton Street in State College. You just go down Atherton Street, leave the friendly confines of downtown, explore the town a little bit. It's across from, it's next to a PNC and across from a CVS, so you're covered no matter where you are at Nittany Cards Plus. They have a bunch of awesome collectibles there, Topps, Bowman, Panini, Upper Deck. And here's the great thing. We're going to be there, so you want to come out for Blue-White Weekend, start your weekend early, 2 p.m. We're going to do a live show previewing the Blue-White game on Friday from Nittany Cards Plus. This trio going to be hanging out there with you and, of course, with Jason Dombach, the owner, give you an idea of what's going on. But it's not just that. You could spend the whole afternoon there, guys, because it's some pretty exciting stuff. Trace McSorley, somebody you actually want to hang out with, he's going to be there from 5 to 6:30 p.m., on Friday night. So you can get the warm-up party with us and then come back later with Trace and he's doing an autograph signing, a meet and greet. Price for quotes and pricing, you can give the store a call, 814-954-7488. So Trace McSorley and the BWI Live Show, the headliners of your Friday pre-Blue-White weekend party over at Nittany Cards Plus. Great place to be. It's going to be a ton of fun. I'm excited to be out there and to meet all of you when you come out and check out all the cool cards. And we'll be in the background giving you some background noise of football talk, guys. Should be a good time.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So let's get into our practice observations. Fitz, I always want to start with you because I don't get to see defense and I'm selfish. I want to know what's going on the defensive side of the ball. So you mentioned Deny Dennis Sutton is back. Any other interesting nuggets, any interesting things you saw that you want to highlight here on the show?
Not a ton. You look at what they've done during these open sessions and there has been a lot of windows into personnel and things like that. They did do some pursuit drills yesterday that gave us a look at, you could say, the starting 11. I'm skeptical because they like to run three linebackers out there, but I'm in the camp that they're going to see a lot of three safety looks this year, especially with Zaki Wheatley playing as well as he is. So I think that's interesting. You roll with that base package of Kobe King and Tony Rojas, and then you throw Don DeLuca in there. I guess they're still calling it the Sam. I don't think we've gotten too deep into that, but it's the Sam field linebacker position. So pretty standard in what you're seeing there. Getting through those lines, it's really interesting, I think, to see the breakup between guys that we know are going to play. Like defensive tackle, I think this is a good example. Defensive tackle, you know that Devon Ellis and Zane Durant probably going to be your starters. You know that Kaziah Izzard's going to be in there. Hakeem Beamon's going to be in there. And then you really don't know much. Like, it's very different. It's a very big break off. And that's a conversation probably for 2025, because Deion Barnes is going to have to, number one, look at the portal. Number two, develop the hell out of those young guys so that they're ready to go next year. But it's an interesting difference in the veteran veteran viewpoint, where you've got those guys going through the line. Then you get to Ty Blanding, you get to Caleb Artis, you get to the young guys and DeAndre Cook and Xavier Gilliam, guys like that. It's just a big, big difference. So you see a lot of the cultivating that they did last year in terms of playing guys that weren't full timers, but guys that, you know, still played a lot of snaps, especially in the first 8 or so weeks of the season. So you see a lot of that cultivating coming through there. You see it at defensive end. Linebacker, I'm still a little bit skeptical. I'm going to be honest with you, like, because depth is, I think, an issue there without Abdul Carter there. Talent is probably, goes sort of in line with that, because when you lose your best linebacker, you need to replace them. And they've got good linebackers. I think they've got talented linebackers. But, like, replacing that experience gulf, that's a big deal. Kobe King's going to have to make up a lot of that. Tony Rojas is going to have to make the strides that we think that he can make, but he hasn't quite made them yet because he still hasn't played in a game, as a full-time linebacker. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. Secondary, hey, Terry, Dex, do your thing. You guys will be fine. So I think that's the way to go with the defense. And yeah, Nate sent me a text yesterday as we were arriving to go cover the offense, and I didn't see it until he walked up and said, "Hey, what are you doing on the defensive side of the field?" So that's kind of where we're at with that coverage. But hey, I'll take another week of defense. It's the easy sailing portion of the open practice.
Don't worry, I have spent
stuff to me.
I have spent every waking moment of the availability with the offense. So there's always somebody over there. It's just like I have a very narrow lens of what I'm looking at. So Nate, your observations from the time you spent at practice, and I can fill in any gaps maybe here in give our fans a sense of what was going on with the offense. Because as you mentioned, the biggest thing was Nick Singleton not being at practice, but there was there's a couple other situations on offense that were a little bit different than normal. But what were you looking at for offense yesterday?
I mean, you ought to ask me to ask you the question, T. Frank, because you saw it.
I wasn't going for that, but sure. Like, some of the interesting things, I was checking out the run game with the quarterbacks and the centers, and Vega Ioane was with the centers for that portion of practice, which was new. I didn't see him snap, though. So that part I thought was interesting. He's over there. But that's just from I'm focused on getting video of Cooper Cousins and people want to see Cooper Cousins, but people want to see Drew Aller. So I don't have a comprehensive view of things, but it was notable to me that he was with that group during that portion of practice, which I hadn't seen before. And then there was the mystery of who was wearing 25. And that was my biggest, like, after I was doing Scooby-Doo investigation of, was that Quentin Martin? Was that not Quentin Martin? We talked about Nick Singleton not being there. The running back depth chart, I think, was a little bit thinner yesterday, so some of those young guys were standing out. And one guy who stood out to me literally since we saw him in February is Cam Wallace. So that running back three competition and, the versatility that Andy Kolodnicki wants in the offense, I think Cam Wallace is showing some of those skills and the physical build and everything you want to see in a running back. Not the biggest guy in the world, but he's a guy that stood out to me during those passing drills you talked about. And, just to hammer this home again, the running backs are going to be involved in that. I do think there's going to be more than just the top two guys, a part of the offense. And then it just seems that there's always one guy that randomly I get way too many views of compared to the rest of the squad. And it's usually a receiver because they cycle through the line and I just happen to get to those players all the time. And I think last year was Liam Clifford. I got a lot of Liam Clifford as opposed to like Keandre Lambert-Smith and Trey Wallace and some of the starters. And this year it's just Andrew Rapoplier. He just keeps showing up on my lens. And every time he does, I'm super impressed. So I don't know if that's a selection bias of he's, you know, a big tight end. So I'm like, oh, look at that receiver. Oh, wait, that's a tight end. And like his effort and the amount of that he stands out going through those lines, I think is noticeable the way he plays in practice, at least during these individual portions that we get to see. So what does that mean for the depth chart and Khalil Dinkins and all those things? I don't know, but it was interesting that he's a guy that seems to be popping up a little bit more on offense.
Well, that's good news because he keeps popping up in my notes as a good player. So that's that goes hand in hand with what we're seeing out of Rapier. Dinkins in and out of the lineup this spring as well. So like I think that goes into it. But I think Rapier is going to have a role, man. Like I don't know how extensive it's going to be. I don't know how extensive that 12 personnel look is going to be because I think there's more to it than just having two tight ends, having three receivers versus having three receivers. You also bring Andy Kotanicki's background with two backs, you know, two backs playing at the same time. It's going to take a third guy off of there, whether it's a second tight end or a third receiver. So I think that can play into it as well. But Rapoplier, I mean, that's a stock up guy. And I think that it just seems safe like that. Like you don't say that about many redshirt freshmen, but it seems pretty safe with him. I will say yesterday, you mentioned the guy that just keeps popping up in drills that maybe you didn't expect or didn't expect to see too much of. Like I saw more Tyrese Mills yesterday than I've seen in 2 years. And he's playing the Sam. So I don't know how big that role is going to be, but like for a guy that we haven't mentioned at all, like he was out on the field a lot in terms of those pursuit drills. Maybe that's just more conditioning or something like that. But like, I just kept it. And it's so weird to see a linebacker wearing number 14. So it's just like, who's this guy? And then you get through the next line. You're like, who is this guy? Oh, yes, right. I just had this conversation with myself. So Tyrese Mills out there. I don't know that he's going to play a lot, but like he's been out there more than probably expected him to see.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, given the number of snaps and the division of snaps at that Sam slot position. But having depth and players like that on the roster, I think is always interesting. He's been an intriguing player since he came from Lackawanna. So, and also bouncing between positions, good to know where he is because at any point he could be at any of like two or three different positions.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean he's going to play a ton. I'm just saying that just for a random Tuesday in March, he was, he's a guy that just kept popping up.
So we've talked a little bit about some of the things I found interesting with James Franklin's press conference yesterday. I want to get into that portion of the show now. And Nate, you brought up spring doesn't really mean what you think it means. From a we're making hard decisions right now.
Yeah.
There's also something that happens after spring football now, which is the transfer portal window. So James Franklin talked about there are no decisions. We're not making any decisions at this point in the calendar. And the part he didn't say, I think, is that. Did you find that as interesting as I did, where was that like a public statement of, hey, guys, we're not making any decisions, so if you are trying to make a decision about the portal, we're not going to give you anything at this point?
Yeah. I thought that, too.
Okay.
Not necessarily in the way you phrased it.
Well, I butchered it, so that's good.
No, but
I didn't like how I said that.
Can we, cause the receivers is the place where I kind of lit our message board on fire last night, and I apologize to anybody that was in the house when I lit it on fire. But look, James talked about the receivers and about, I don't want to mess this up, so I'm paraphrasing pretty hard here, but effectively nobody is standing out. But also doing well, right? So the group is doing well, but nobody stands out. I don't know about you guys. I wouldn't say all the time, but like I'm a deja vu guy. Like I swear to God, I've heard this before, right? not just in this, but all over the place. When he said that yesterday, it felt like I was a year younger I was back to my 30s, right? I was like, hey, this is a very familiar thing to be standing in Haluba Hall, listening to James Franklin say this. So, you know, there's a lot of bodies on this team, right? Mm-hmm. That is part of the reality of where this team stands right now. I mean, I think James said even in his pre-spring press conference, they had 125.
Yep.
Now. Right. So, and obviously that includes walk-ons. There's various whatever, right? But there's a reality to this that they're gonna have to get down to 85. And you would wonder, right, if nobody is standing out at receiver, and maybe even he's not being totally fair there, that a Trey Wallace and a Keandre and a Julian Fleming, right, that they're probably in a different part of the pack.
Right.
But you have to wonder what's going to happen to those other guys, right? You have to wonder who, not just from the program standpoint of needing to get down to 85, but for those players themselves of who, like, where's the opportunity? Where is the pathway to getting the amount of reps and at this point in their career and the development that they're looking to make? Is like,
yeah.
Is that happening on schedule? So, I had some of the same thoughts that you did, but it's, there's a duality to it. It's not just the program side of it. It's for those players themselves of,
yeah.
Hey, if you've been in the program, if this is your third spring, what's next, right? Like where is this going? And, you know, for Penn State itself also,
Yeah, they have been fits. We've talked about this.
Safe. More in a pause than Nate Bauer. It's really art.
The radio part of me fits. The dead air that he creates is both great and impactful, but I'm terrified every time.
It's like asking him a question, then the 5 seconds there. Couple less for those listening to us on 1.25 or 1.5. But no, it makes me wonder if my internet goes off, and we've had internet issues in the past. So there's that.
We've had this conversation about the receiver room, but also the team in general. Their retention through these transfer portal windows has been better than expected, but it has to end at some point, I guess, is what Nate is saying. And one of the things to kind of tie in the receiver room here, Fitz, is the difference from last year is it sounded like, and maybe I'm just reading between the lines here, the floor of the group is higher this year. They feel a little bit better about that group. You mentioned improvement, but also nobody's standing out. There's no wide receiver one. They don't have a leader necessarily of these groups or players that are stratifying. It's more of the collection is good and we feel better about it this year. Is that a fair way? Or did I read too much into that?
I read it, and I talked to some people about this earlier in the day. I read it as the bulk rating for the group is incrementally improved. But in terms of the difference that you need to make on a big game to big game basis, not even talking about, you know, just the out of conference schedule or anything like that, but the difference that you have to make is in the separation that you get from your top guys. And I think we're still waiting on that. So I think that that's fair. I think that they have improved. Again, there's talent there, but it needs to be tapped appropriately, and it needs to have those guys know what they're doing on a consistent basis. I mean, like, it sounds cliche, it sounds stupid, but the consistency is what gets it done here. Like, you look at, by the end of the season, like, you weren't even getting the lack of consistency, but you hit a big play every once in then. You were just getting neither. And I think that, you know, if you're going to have one or the other, you want to have consistency. And I just don't think they're there yet. And I think that there's, like, this is the reason I've been, I don't want to say holding off on stuff this spring, but like, hey, we're going to hear some good things. We're going to hear that Trey Wallace is doing well, because Trey Wallace is a talented guy, athletic guy. But until you see it put into process, like, that, there's a reason to be skeptical. And that's why we're going to do it. Now, you feel good about the running game. You feel good about the ability to get things done. You feel good about the ability to put, what was the word that Andy used last week? To put defenses in.
Distortion.
Distortion.
His favorite word is distortion. Yeah.
You're going to put defenses in distortion, and it's going to be a challenge for a lot of defensive coordinators in the Big Ten. But you've got to get the guys to understand why they're in the right spot. You got to get those guys to set up. And that's why I thought the most fascinating thing of the spring so far was James Franklin's talking about the why last week, the why they do things, to understand why they have to set up, to understand that, I don't want to say that there's going to be dead plays, but there are going to be plays that are in spots to set up other plays. And you have to understand that maybe the ball's not coming your way this time, but like there's a reason it's not coming your way. And the reason is it's going to result in something big down the line. Now that's the structure. That's the framework. That is the cover letter of this offense is like, that's what the potential is. And then you've got to get everybody to understand the why of the situation. I think that that's what you go. And, you know, starts with the guy throwing the ball, you know, taking the snaps and everything like that. But a lot of it falls to the guys that gets to that, you know, end up making those stats into something, like making those yards after catch, making those things, you know, when you swing the ball out to the running back and Nick Singleton can do what we've seen him do, what he's able to do. Those little things that, you know, sort of make the difference. And I think that that's why, you know, you kind of just tap the brakes on this offense until you can see it in action. And I'm not talking about the spring game. And unfortunately for Penn State, who is trying to, you know, I don't want to say drum up fan interest, but like get some buzz going.
Yep.
It's tough to do that without a game.
He did talk about how the offense is making it challenging on the linebackers and safeties. And that's what you're talking about there, that distortion and attacking with motion shifts and formations, a lot of that stuff. But I think you illustrated, let me illustrate the point you made with some of the things I've seen on film and why they're important. So you run a ghost motion, which is in the backfield. You come behind the running backs, behind the quarterbacks. You got to make that look the same every single time because it has a function on the play. And if you don't run that route correctly or you don't run a different route downfield correctly because you know, like, okay, this is going to be a run. I don't have to run my route the right way. Well, then later on, when that is a play action and you've got to run your route, if you've given them keys about what is about to happen, it doesn't look the same. Like there are subtle differences. You got to be consistent and do all these things the same way so that the run and pass blend together and you create those, that fear of confusion and uncertainty in the defense. So just one of those.
You want to make collegiate defenders think.
Yes.
And that's like, that is when they get away from, you know, what they're able to do the most. And especially with the defenses that you're trying to do this to, like the good ones in the conference, like essentially, you make those guys think, and you know, a pause gives you a second to get through. And I mean, that's the entire, like I said, the cover letter of this offense is to try and make that happen.
We've had so much to talk about here on the show. I apologize. I have not been ignoring the chat. I just love the fact that we've got a lot of people going and having conversations in there as well. Of course, saving some stuff for the mailbag, but Corey Smith here in the chat, she says, you three make it so hard for me not to get overly excited about Penn State football before April 1st. I thought we were being wet blankets. I'm glad that somebody's excited about all of this stuff, given what we're talking about. Corey Smith is presumably here, and I'm fairly certain I know who I'm talking about. This is Corey Smith's mom. She's tried to take a break for a few weeks, dropping Corey off in May. So appreciate her being on the channel. She's commented on some YouTube videos before. Happy to have you here on the live show. So welcome, and always excited to have new and friendly faces here on the show. People who are associated with the program, players, coaches, family. We like having everybody here on the show. Nate, was there anything else from James Franklin that you wanted to cover you thought was interesting?
No. The linebackers was kind of interesting. You know, certainly going through Tamir Robinson and Kavion Keys is needing to develop as their depth pieces, right? I would call it a recurring theme at this point with Abdul, right? Like the Abdul conversation,
the consequences of your actions sort
Correct.
Of conversation. Yeah.
100%.
And it's
twofold, right? It is. Yes. Here's the impact of a room that is already losing a stalwart in Curtis Jacobs, right? Yep. That's the part that is a thing, right? And obviously attrition happens naturally. You're going to have players cycle out, but he was a guy who played a million snaps for Penn State and was reliable in that room for Penn State over the past few seasons. So he's out. Okay. But then on top of that, now you move Abdul Carter. There are ramifications to that. There is going to be an impact there in the linebacker room, in addition to, and I wrote about it last week, like Abdul having to learn a new position.
Yep.
And Fitz, I'd be curious to hear your take on this. Like, I'm 99% that this is not an experiment, right? This is happening.
Yeah. I mean, James said as much that they wanted to move, so they moved him. Like, they, I mean, this is like, and I understand that my pauses aren't as good as yours. I'm sorry. I understand that you can play with him in different ways. Like, you can do different things, and he knows the position, roughly knows the position behind him. It's a different coordinator, different defense, quote unquote. So like, it's going to be different. You can drop him to coverage from there. Like, you can do a lot of things because of his positional versatility, because of the background that he has. So like, saying that he's going to go out there and be a three down defensive end, I don't know that that's going to be really where it's going to be. But it's, you know, it's tough to sort of project his snap count based on the guys that are around him. Like, like moving, like I say this, don't play the video game. Like, don't play NCAA 14 where you move a guy from a certain position and then all of a sudden his rating jumps in another position. Like, the guys that are at his position already have a certain rating per se, because they've played that position, because they've experienced the position, because they've played live at that position. And it's so important to understand what you're doing there. So he's going to have to make up that difference. And it is, no matter, he's phenomenally talented. Like, it goes without saying how talented that kid and how athletic and explosive and everything that he can be, and how this does, you know, from on paper, play to his strengths. Like, he's phenomenal at attacking in a straight line, going after the quarterback and essentially murdering quarterbacks. You know, that's what that could be one of his specialties.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing for a defensive end to have. I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to spoil the insider stuff here, but it's a good thing to have. So like, it all makes sense, but it's going to be a process. Like, there are nuances that go with that position that, you know, only guys that have been playing it for a long time. So Nate, you've been playing golf your whole life, right? Essentially.
Yeah, more or less.
Good enough. Sure. Yeah. Just for the purpose of the drill. Do this.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Since I started later in life. It's harder for me to pick that up, to step in, and, you know, eventually I can get there and beat you. But it's going to take some time. It's going to take some practice, and it's going to take some things falling into place. And I think that that's what we're saying with Abdul Carter here, is he's going to get there. We feel confident in that he's going to get there.
Yeah.
It's going to be a process, and it's not going to be a snap your fingers and move his position on NCAA 14. And all of a sudden he's the best pass rusher in the game. Like, I don't think that's how that works.
Yeah. His athletic profile is different than his skill level profile, and those things can equal out pretty quickly, but they do take some time. What were you going to say, Nate?
I was just going to say, he's not going to get there in golf. That I can't allow.
I'm going to beat you.
I can't abide.
It's going to happen.
It's nonsense. Go ahead.
Keep avoiding me.
So this is something actually that came up with Tom Allen, not your golf game and your golf competition, which I would
eventually
been surprised. It might.
Yeah.
Is he a big golfer? Or
I don't know.
Okay. I didn't know if you knew that about him, like if you'd seen him out there already. He talked about the position versatility, and I highlighted this in the offseason of last year. They had a old school, essentially is what I call it, Sam linebacker, who played that quasi-edge rusher, come up and mug tight ends, but also could play in space. And he said yesterday, we're not really doing that with this defense because everybody at the defensive end position can do that, so we don't need to highlight one player. They can all drop into coverage. We can do zone blitzes. We saw Manny Diaz do this with this group last year. So the versatility for Abdul Carter is absolutely still on the table, and it is the same way for Zariah Fisher and for all the other players. So that was an interesting thing. But the conversation about the linebacker position, if there's one thing I read into, and this will be the last thing that I have here on James Franklin because I want to get to the mailbag, as much as he said, we're laying the foundation right now, not really having anything like any goalposts of what we wanted to do and et cetera, halfway through. He started spring practice talking about liking the depth at linebacker and the talent they had built up. And then now talking about needing to manufacture some depth at linebacker in the summer. If there's something I'm reading here, it's that maybe that wasn't exactly what they were expecting so far in the first seven practices, knowing that it's early. But that's an area where I would identify, okay, Tom Allen talked about playing a base defense, playing three linebackers. It's important to his defense. But how much are you really if you don't feel good about your depth? And if we're talking about Tony Rojas playing both Will and Sam, and we don't really know what's going on there, like you got to make some decisions at some point. And I think just the tea leaves say it's going to look one way, and they're going to have to, you know, condense that linebacker position, because as much as they may like the guys, they might not be there yet. At that position. So one of the few insights I have no idea if that's correct or not, but it's fun for me to say here on the channel.
So that leads us to who's the most probably the most important guy on the defense is probably Jalen Reed.
Oh, yeah.
Like what he's able to do to move around as a safety. And we thought this might be KJ Winston, but like Jalen Reed, probably the smartest guy in the back, like maybe the smartest guy on the defense, like in terms of like where everybody's supposed to be, but like can do a lot of different things. We've always seen him as a rover. We've always seen him as a potential Sam, like even, you know, coming into his career, the way that he played in Detroit as a high school player. Like this guy is vital, like phenomenally important to this defense. And I'm excited to see what he can bring to the table because like they feel pretty confident in that three safety look right now.
Let's get into some of your questions in the BWI mailbag. First is Lambda. He says Fitz is the Abdul Carter of golf. Stop. Is how he summed up that conversation. But don't worry. Chad Lander says sounds more like Fitz is the Tyler Elsden of golf. So Tyler Elsden slander aside, Fitz
every time a linebacker comes up. That's yeah.
Why does Elsden catch strays constant? This poor guy.
I don't know. So Fitz, let's just leave that one. That one is just we'll let the internet decide that one. Let's see. We got some questions here in the chat. Actually, I'm going to go over here to our questions from the Blue White Illustrated message board. Best way to get your question featured so I can make all the pretty graphics and everything is to subscribe to BlueWhiteIllustrated.com. The night before the live show, I put this up. You get your question on the show in like RD24. With some highly touted 2026 quarterbacks coming to town, do you believe Penn State has a good shot at landing a difference-making high four-star fringe five-star signal caller in the class of 2022? Nate, what do you... I'm just kidding. Fitz. Nate recruiting
good.
Joke.
That was pretty good.
Fitz, what do you got?
What do I got? Okay, so Penn State has hosted some really, really good ones in the last 2 weeks. Dia Bell's mentioned, Troy Hune's mentioned, Brady Hart. Sorry, I almost called him his dad's name. Faison Brandon was on campus yesterday. He's the number one quarterback in on three. Like they have had top four or five top 10 quarterbacks in the 2026 class on campus so far. The buzzkill here is that's usually the case. Like Penn State has had in the spring, especially they've had guys like that of that stature in town. Like, and this is an ever evolving position. This is an ever evolving valuation position. And will these guys be at the end there at the end? I don't know. Like you look back a couple of years ago, Penn State had Julian Sain on campus like that.
Yeah.
Like you don't think about these things because these guys come in, they check out on a road trip. They check out Penn State. They check out Michigan. They check out Ohio State. They check out Notre Dame. You know, this is spring break time. So this is not out of the ordinary. It's awesome. Like it's great. Cause Penn State is one of those schools, one of those dozen or so programs that does get the top guys. Like, a lot of the top guys on campus, whether they can make them stick or not, that depends. So it's encouraging so far, but at the same time, it's not out of the ordinary compared to how Penn State usually does this with quarterbacks. And number one, we'll see where those guys rank in a year and probably be committed by then, of course, but we'll see where those guys rank in a year. And we'll see if those evaluations are the ones that Penn State eventually wants to go after. It's great to be ranked early. It's great to be ranked anytime. Like it's, I don't want to say it's an honor to be ranked, but like, you're an elite member if you're a three-star quarterback. Like you're really good. But yeah, that's going to continue. The thing about this question that is sort of they label it as the difference maker. The difference maker here is what happens with Danny O'Brien, because number one, you're looking at a situation, and this is vitally important for Penn State that they go forward with this measure to get analysts, get other guys to expand their coaching role, essentially, like to basically blow up the 10 assistants rule right now. You can have 10 assistant coaches that can travel, that can, you know, do the things that the on-field assistants go. And then you have to make Danny O'Brien all of a sudden a graduate assistant because he can't work with the quarterbacks unless he's a graduate assistant. So if this expands and this goes, that's great news for Penn State because you can keep Danny O'Brien. You can pay those guys like Dan Connor, all those guys. And then you can have them recruit, sometimes go on the road. I know it was great to have Danny O'Brien get on the road to see some of these guys in the offseason when they had some staff movement. But that's the important thing to me here is how do you solidify your quarterback coach to get to that next cycle, to get these guys that really like Danny O'Brien to kind of keep coming back. So I think that's the elephant in the room right now is how do you coach quarterbacks moving forward, because Danny can't be a graduate assistant his whole life, you know? So
yeah,
you can bump him to analyst. You can bump him to whatever role this might expand into, because I don't know. I don't know what the labeling is going to be. But if you have not necessarily unlimited staff, but if you have something that resembles unlimited staff, that gives you the ability to recruit quarterbacks at a much higher level.
Yeah. It gives you an opportunity to have specialists, I imagine, as well. And it just, that's a great topic too, for the recruiting show, of like, okay, so is that opening Pandora's box as well, of now every school in the country can have specialists for all these different positions. Anyway, Stephen Keel asks, should new offensive coordinator help the wide receivers? We had a conversation about nobody's really standing out, and Fitz, we talked a little bit about this, but I guess on the whole, if we simplified it down, does Andy Kotelnicki help this room, in your opinion, where they don't have to be great, they don't have to be standout superstars, Jahan Dotson first round, but as long as they can operate the offense, they can be productive. Do you think that's the case?
Yeah, but they have to operate and maximize the offense. Like, I think that it's the potential's there. The potential was there with Mike Yurcich too. That's the thing. Like, yep. It's really kind of on the players and on the offense, and understanding why they're in the situations that they're into, and maximizing sort of their roles. I mean, you're not going to ask Omari Evans and Liam Clifford to play the same role. Like, that's kind of the thing, is how do you carve out that niche and make yourself the best person at that niche to make yourself sort of indispensable. So I think it gives that ability to those guys. And every time that you have a coordinator, and we're, you know, dousing the Kool-Aid here, but every time you have a coordinator, you have that opportunity.
Kevin Gillick. Nate, can you explain to Kevin Gillick how this is a bit of a question we can't answer? He says, is Quentin Martin getting a look at receiver at all, based on what we see in practice?
Well, he wasn't there yesterday.
Yes.
That helps. Yeah.
That helps.
But I mean, we don't see enough to notice the differences there.
So. Yeah.
I would also say, I don't know. Maybe this is insight. Maybe it's not, but I am very much under the impression that all of those running backs will run routes. Right. Like, yes, used as receivers, but they're running backs.
Very important distinction, Nate. Thank you for making that that you can be an effective receiver in this offense and be a running back like that, and be labeled a running back. That seems to be something that's pretty consistent.
I think the general populace wants to take snaps away from receivers and make running backs receivers. Like, and Penn State's got some like guys that can catch the ball, like Cam Wallace can catch the ball, Quentin Martin, yep, catch the ball, Corey Smith's coming in, he's a guy that can catch the ball really well. Like, they have these guys that can do it, but I think people want to see a receiver playing in the slot.
Like, well, you will, or, but he's a running back, right?
Playing in the slot.
Yeah.
You'll
see some alignments like that.
Somebody said, and I can't remember who it was now, but I feel like it was during that, you know, second year player media availability in February. And again, like, this is third hand at this point, but I was asking him about,
Cam Wallace.
It might've been Cam. Doesn't matter. But I was asking somebody about, hey, you know, do you feel like the backs are going to be used in the passing game more, right? Not as receivers, but just used in the passing game more. If you look back, I'm kind of fixated on 2016 and 2017 right now. Like, Barkley had like 50 catches in the 2017 season. And I think Nick Singleton might have a lot of catches. And I think maybe Katron has more catches than he did. Like, I feel like if I'm reading tea leaves and pointing directions, the running backs are the demonstrable strength of this offense, the proven strength of this offense, and they are going to use them and run them into the ground, just because that's your asset. But again, relaying the point, do you feel like you're going to catch more balls this year? And it was like, yeah, Franklin was in the weight room something and was like, saying over and over and over, hit the jugs every single, to the running back specifically, hit the jugs machine. And it has been consistent throughout the winter, throughout the spring. All of the feedback from those guys, including Katron Allen last night, saying, yeah, more time on the jugs. Yeah. So to me, that is a flashing green light of this is where these things are headed, is they're going to deliver the ball to those guys in space, catching the football.
Something that I think is important, I think gets into Kevin's question. Two things here, and I don't want to go too long on this because I obsess about this stuff, but in 2016, Saquon Barkley's average depth of target was 5.5 yards downfield. That is a massive number for a running back. So if you have negative yardage, means you're catching swing passes, you're not in open space. You're just not in the pocket. And then the second thing is, you know, they can be, if you're lining up a receiver in the slot, typically you're taking a slot receiver off the field, which is where Penn State has some of their more dependable receivers at this point. So is that even helping you with the receiver conversation? Let's go with this one from Mech Engineer. He donated to the channel yesterday and again today. So I just want to make sure we get these, highlight these people and thank them for their contributions. He says, it sounds like Drew Shelton really isn't much better at all, if at all, than the other guys at the position. So we're placing too much emphasis on his absence fits.
No, I don't think so. I think he's a starter. I think he's needs to get better, obviously. And it's really sucks that he can't participate this spring, because this is what we call a big spring for him. But no, I mean, I think that like they've seen enough to understand that Drew Shelton is the leader for a reason. Like he is the leader for this position for a reason. Be interesting to see how those other guys pop up. Heard great things on Anthony Doncall, even though he's on the right side this spring. But it's going to be a process where you're going to have a significant drop off at offensive tackle, but Shelton still seems like the best of the bunch.
Nate, I want to come to you for this one. Is there a non-wide receiver that you were expecting to be further along in development at this point? Yeah. From what? Just maybe some feedback, something you've seen, just generally, like, we're not talking about X the way you thought we would.
This pass. Is not one of those insightful pauses.
Yeah, no, this is not
the opposite of an insightful pause.
Okay. Yeah, I'm jogging the playlist right now. Can we come back to this one? I will have an answer for this in 20 seconds.
Okay, so I'll go.
Sure. Sahadek, the competition right now with Ryan Barker, with Chase Meyer. No, I'm non-wide receiver. First off, there's 30 receivers on the roster, so like that takes out a big chunk of the roster. Exaggerating, of course, but the battle at kicker, and me as a special teams guy, I'm going to talk about Ryan Barker here for a second. Like, I'm really intrigued to see what he can bring to the table, because, you know, I think everybody, I don't want to say everybody, because everybody's pretty down on Sander after the way he started last year, but like, he's the scholarship guy. Like, you would think that he's got the leg up here, but I think Ryan Barker is a guy that, you know, when you talk to, I haven't talked to Justin Lustig about, but when you talked to Stacey Collins about him, when Stacey was still here, when you talked to Alex Falcons about him, like there was something about him that really, you know, kind of jumped out in the competition aspect of everything. And that's such a mental position that it really comes down to a lot of that. And I don't think this is something that's going to be settled anytime soon, but like Barker's a name that, you know, because he's a redshirt freshman walk-on, that like a lot of Penn State fans in the general populace don't really know that name.
All right, Nate, what do you got?
That's such a cop out. No. Well, can I say Zane Durant and say that I think he will become a superstar?
Yeah, that's an interesting conversation that I think that defensive tackle rotation, they're all coming back, but is there room for them to be better than they were previously? Not just be good, actually take a step forward, because a lot of those guys are really old and kind of, you know, fully matured players. Is there room for development? So you think Zane Durant can be a superstar?
I do.
Yeah, that's fair.
Just based on the way he was talked about before he ever played a snap, right? And that may have been unfair in the first place, but he was so impressive. And yes, I think he's remained impressive. I don't think there's any.
The issue with Durant is when he came in so small, but like so active, and you could see the impact taking place. But it came with a caveat, and this is the thing a lot of people miss when you're talking about spring feedback and things like that. Came with a caveat. He's probably not going to play right away because he is so small. Like, mm-hmm. This is a guy with a ton of potential. And I think he's turned into that. Like, he's an all Big Ten defensive lineman. Like, he, and even at that size, you know, that he's got a lot to work through. But I think he's an awesome I hesitate to say prospect because he's going to get knocked for that in the draft process, but he's an awesome player. Like, yeah. And I think that's kind of where you're going with that, is that like, he still has room to get better because he can still get bigger. He can still get more active and he can still benefit from the guys around him in a way that maybe some other people on that defensive line might be inverse to that, to that thinking.
There was a play against Northwestern where he beat three separate offensive linemen on the way to disrupting a play. Just getting those consistently from him, you know, more of those more often. Halfway through last year, I think we started to see that turn, Nate.
I see a bunch of people talking about offensive linemen, right? Birch and maybe Javen, right? But I don't think I ever saw them that way. And if Cooper Cousins does what he seems like he's doing and will do, that is so far the exception to the rule that, like, I want to acknowledge that as being special and these other guys not being dominant as second year players. I don't want to frame that as not special. I want to frame that as normal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think there's an element of, like, we're around the program so much, we reset expectations in our heads, like, pretty often. Like, Berkmeyer, yes, the expectations out of the gate last year were really high because of the feedback initially. And then we kind of like saw everything come together and you're like, okay, well, maybe this kid needs a year or two. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. It's like the reset expectations in our heads probably make this question a little bit more difficult than it needs to be, because people latch on to the first thing they hear. And then that's for some people for the next 4 years, that's all they think about.
And, yeah. And Javen is, like, he never pass blocked that, right? And yes. I understand that there was some of that conversation during the recruiting process, but it's almost like the five-star was like a disservice to him, because he was always, at least based on my understanding, he was always a third year guy, right? Before he was going to make that type of impact. And I mean, I think that there have been quite a few signs indicating that's what his trajectory is. I'm not saying that he can't play in a pinch or be a backup and get reps this year. I mean, I think he will, but I mean, Fitz, like, I'm not clocking him as a true competitor.
Ryan and I had talked about that before, that not that we didn't think he had five-star talent, but like, this is a guy that like was clearly not ready. Like, clearly, like, even going into last year, like, that wasn't the guy we were talking about. Like, we were talking about Berkmeyer. We were wrong about that. We're talking about that guy being ready. Like, this has always been a multi-year project. And I agree that five-star does a disservice to a certain extent, because it conflates the expectations of the people that think he can come in and fix things right away.
Let's continue this conversation about the offensive line, but in a different vein, the T. Frank gets in trouble vein here. Of all the good young offensive linemen, who has the most upside? This is where I always go, like, well, if everything works out for this guy, like, Fitz, do you have somebody who comes to mind for this question, or do you want me to just dive right in and say all the hot takes?
Yeah, I think I said that about Egan Boyer around signing day. Like, if everything clicks, everything's great for him. But things have, you know, it's going to be a long way before that one clicks. But Donka is the guy that I turn to. Like, you look at everything that he brings to the table from a physical perspective, and you see a lot of Olu in him in the way that he approaches the game. And I think that's good. And comparing anyone to Olu, completely unfair, and I'm not doing that right now, but you see a lot of the similarities in the approach that they took. And also, like you say about the similarities of, or not the similar, you said the thing that you said about Javen Williams and the five-star, Duncan didn't deal with that. Olu didn't deal with that. And he came in, did a great job of handling everything, redshirting his first year, learning to essentially get in the way, and then get in the way with that massive body of his and use the technique that is being taught to him. Hey, things go a long way in that regard. So, you can't help but look at him and think that that's one. And we ranked him pretty high, I believe on three. It was still at 24/7 at that point, but we ranked him pretty high based on his potential, and it seems like he's heading in that direction.
Yeah, I would also categorize him as an uncommon player in that conversation of Cooper Cousins playing as early as he is, being part of the conversation for that right tackle position as a redshirt freshman after playing guard, not just his first year at Penn State, but also in high school. Like, he didn't play tackle at his high school, which is, that's rare. If you're one of the best offensive linemen and a four-star, typically you're playing tackle, left tackle, unless there's another guy who's a prospect on your team. So,
and it depends on your offense. It depends a lot. Javen played guard as a pulling guard. He was a freaking mauler. So there's that. The other thing here, and this is a public service announcement to high school offensive linemen, go to camp. Learn these things at camp. Go, don't be too good to go to camp. don't be the guy that's just like, I don't need to learn anything else because I've got these offers. Go to camp, work with these potential, I'm not even talking about Penn State camp, like go to these camps where you want to understand what you're going to be in for. And I understand that there's a ton of movement in the assistant coaching world, and that offensive line coach may not be your offensive line coach, but understand what you're getting into when you get into it and go to camp and learn these things, because it will make you not only more ready to step on the field early, but it will make you a better football player in general. And I think that's what we've gotten away when it comes to camp, is guys just think they're too good at camp anymore. And like, I'm sorry, man, but like this is a process that thousands of people have gone through, and it's cost thousands of people development, like in that sense. So that's where I would go with the offensive line talk, is like, soak up all you can get. And Donka is a great example. Cooper Cousins is a great example. We're going to see if some of these other guys that they're bringing in are examples of this. I don't want to call it trend, but something like that.
Yeah, I think we've answered this question here, but I want to make sure that PSU Jim gets his love here on the show. What are the key changes you have seen in personnel groups and alignments that would indicate some philosophical changes on either side of the ball? I just want to highlight this again. 20 personnel. Two running backs is going to be not a big part of this offense, meaning they're on the field together all the time, but I think this is a significant portion of the offense we're going to see more of. We haven't seen it in practice, but these are the things we know about Andy Kotelnicki. Do either of you guys have a conversation about personnel packages, maybe on defense or something else that I'm not highlighting here that you want to bring up to answer PSU Jim's question?
Someone mentioned in the chat that Penn State's base defense is now a 4-2-5. Not quite. Like, it's heading that direction, but it's not quite there. But you're going to see a lot of three safeties. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that you could get. And you can look at how Tom Allen has coached some of these positions in the past. It's okay to have a big old middle linebacker in there. Like, kind of got away from that a little bit under Manny Diaz, but a guy like Tamir Robinson, this might be a great example of a guy that could fit into Tom Allen's defense a little bit better than he could fit into Manny Diaz's defense. So I'm excited to see sort of that development. And as I think it was James that mentioned it last night, that Tamir and Kevion Keyes still need to make strides there. But I think that the opportunity for some of these guys is certainly still there in this defensive formation.
Last question we're going to do here on the Mailbag Show. This is from Alex Light. I think this is a great question and great preview of what's coming up. Can we gauge a meaningful success from the blue-white game, or is it too restricted to get a pulse check on the program? What should we look for? Nate, what are your takeaways from a blue-white game when you go, okay, wow, I was impressed by that?
I don't really care about the game. I care more about what, and I mean, you guys know that, like, the sentiment that comes from the program, right, on the backside of spring practice, right, is okay. Who are the players that have given themselves an opportunity to continue to get better through the summer? If somebody makes a nice play or a few nice plays, that would be encouraging, right?
The Dom DeLuca of 2024.
But look, Dom DeLuca is going to play football this year, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I get it, but like, Dom DeLuca is going to play football this year.
Put that on a graphic.
I think that issues with the passing game that existed last spring showed up in the fall. Right. Like, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I don't think we're going to see much of Singleton and Katron, I guess. Right. Maybe we'll have a much better idea. And obviously this is a couple of weeks away still, but we'll probably have a better idea of that third back. Right. Like, I just think offensively it's going to be my anticipation fully is for the defense to destroy Penn State's offense. Just dominate. That's my expectation. And so are you taking too much away from that if you expect the defense to be much better than the offense in the fall? No, probably not. I think that's exactly what this team is going to be this season. So yeah, no, there are things that you can read into it. Sure. Yeah.
Fitz,
I did a full 180 within the span of a minute
really
of answering that question.
I tend to put more stock in the feedback that we get, you know, off of that visual, the stunning visual display that we get to see every April. The interesting thing to me, and this is more philosophical than anything, is yes, I also think the defense is going to be in position to destroy the offense. Does James revert to, hey, there's a lot of people watching and we don't want to throw interceptions? Like, does that change the thinking in terms of like how much they not just how much they show, how much they do, you know, how much they want to run the ball? Like that is the interesting thing to me, is like this offense is very much a work in progress. Nate, you're like foaming at the mouth right now. This offense is very much a work in progress, and it's not going to be completely installed by the end of the spring. Like there's only so much that you can do on April 13th or whatever date that is. Sorry, I don't have that one ingrained in my brain yet. There's only so much that you can do. And I'm going to just be curious to see how much they put out there and how much risk they put out there. Because it's still a build.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say just the last thing I'd say is clean execution. If you got that from the offense, you should feel pretty good. If there aren't a bunch of procedural penalties and people line up where they're supposed to and then move where they're supposed to, pretty good start for an offense that looks a lot like, looks like Ring Around the Rosie sometimes, you know, or Duck Duck Goose when you line this offense up. Guys, that's the note we're getting out of here on Duck Duck Goose and Ring Around the Rosie. Yeah, that's fine. Fitz, we got a recruiting show coming up tomorrow. A lot of good stuff coming up.
We do. Ryan was working overtime this weekend. We had a massive stomach virus that came through the house this weekend. So Ryan was working double. So I appreciate him. I'm going to lean on him on the show for tomorrow, because they had a lot of visitors in this past weekend. A lot of visitors coming in Friday. Like, it is a really good list shaping up on Friday. So check us out on BlueWhiteIllustrated.com for more of that.
All right, Nate, we're going to get out of here. Do you have something you want to say?
I do.
Okay.
Just to hold us over until next time. Penn State should have thrown more interceptions last season.
I agree.
All right.
Food for thought, and we could talk about that for an hour next week.
Let's do it. I'm going to set it in stone. A special BWI live show. Just interceptions. That's coming up next week. I don't know if that's coming
you
up.
You label it, the people will flock to it. They just want to, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. All right. That'll do it for today. We'll be back tomorrow live talking about recruiting, the future of Penn State football being built in the spring, and the building blocks of official visits, all that great stuff. We'll talk to you then.